content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today's stories include companies fighting efforts by states to rein in drug prices, and plan would let coal states set emissions. And we'll begin with companies fight efforts by states to rein in drug prices. States around the country are clamping down on pharmaceutical companies, forcing them to disclose and justify price increases. But the drug manufacturers are fighting back, challenging the state laws as a violation of their constitutional rights. Even more states are, for the first time, trying to regulate middlemen who play a crucial role by managing drug benefits for employers and insurers while taking payments from drug companies in return for giving preferential treatment to their drugs. The bipartisan efforts by states come as President Donald Trump and his administration put pressure on drug companies to freeze prices and reduce out-of-pocket costs for consumers struggling to pay for drugs that often cost thousands of dollars a month. 24 states have passed 37 bills this year to curb rising prescription drug costs, according to Trish Riley, the executive director of the National Academy for State Health Policy, a nonpartisan forum of policymakers, and several state legislatures are still in session. The burst of state activity on drug costs recalls the way states acted on their own to pass laws to expand health insurance coverage in the years before Congress passed the Affordable Care Act in 2010. In the absence of federal action, states are taking the lead in combating high drug prices, said State Representative Sean Scanlon of Connecticut, a Democrat. A bill passed unanimously this year by the Connecticut General Assembly illustrates a popular tactic. States are shining a spotlight on drug price increases as a first step toward controlling cost. Under the Connecticut law, drug companies must justify price increases for certain drugs if the price rises by at least 20% in 1 year or 50% over 3 years. Insurers must identify their 25 highest-cost drugs and the 25 with the greatest cost increases when they file their annual rate request with the state insurance department. In addition, the middlemen, known as pharmacy benefit managers, must disclose the amount of rebates and other price concessions they receive from drug companies. Republicans have their own reasons for concern. As state legislators, we are responsible for the wise stewardship of taxpayers' money, said State Representative Norm Thurston of Utah, a Republican. The state spends a lot of taxpayers' money on prescription drugs through Medicaid, corrections and jails, state employees, higher education employees, and their dependents. We should be sure we're getting the best deal. In response to a bill introduced by Thurston, the Utah Health Department is studying possible ways to import prescription drugs from Canada, and he is working with a Republican state senator on a bill to require the reporting of price information by drug companies. California has adopted a law requiring drug companies to provide advance notice of price increases, together with a detailed statement of the reasons for the increases. In addition, insurers must file annual reports showing the percentage of premiums attributable to drug cost. Californians have a right to know why their medication costs are out of control, especially when pharmaceutical profits are soaring, Governor Jerry Brown said. Drug companies have filed suit to block the California law, which they describe as unprecedented and unconstitutional. The law exports California's policy choices to the rest of the country and violates the First Amendment by compelling drug manufacturers to explain their price increases, said the lawsuit filed by the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America. Pharma, along with the Biotechnology Innovation Organization, also went to court to challenge a law signed by Governor Brian Sandoval of Nevada, a Republican. The Nevada law requires manufacturers of diabetes medicines, such as insulin, to report detailed information, including the production cost for each drug, the amount spent to market the profits earned on its sales, and the amount of rebates paid to pharmacy benefit managers for sales of the drug in Nevada. Drug companies dropped the lawsuit in June after Nevada agreed that certain information in the drug price reports could be kept confidential. And next, plan would let coal state set emissions. The Trump administration next week plans to formally propose a vast overhaul of climate change regulations that would allow individual states to decide how or even whether to curb carbon dioxide emissions from coal plants, according to a summary of the plan and details provided by three people who have seen the full proposal. The plan would also relax pollution rules for power plants that need upgrades. That, combined with allowing states to set their own rules, creates a serious risk that emissions, which had been falling, could start to rise again, according to environmentalists. The proposal, which President Donald Trump is expected to highlight Tuesday at a rally in West Virginia, amounts to the administration's strongest and broadest effort yet to address what the president has long described as a regulatory war on coal. It would considerably weaken what is known as the Clean Power Plan, former President Barack Obama's signature regulation for cutting planet warming emissions at coal-fired plants. That rule, crafted as the United States prepared to enter into the 2015 Paris Agreement on global warming, was the first federal carbon pollution restriction for power plants. In 2016, the Supreme Court temporarily blocked the regulation from taking effect while a federal court heard arguments from a coalition of coal states that sued to block the rule. It remains suspended. Now, the Trump administration wants to defang the Obama-era rule. The move follows a separate decision this month to freeze Obama-era fuel efficiency standards that were also aimed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions. These are the two biggest sectors of the economy that contribute to greenhouse gases in the country and are just hugely significant in terms of emissions, said Janet McCabe, the Environmental Protection Agency air chief under Obama. Together, the transportation sector and the power sector account for more than half of the country's emissions, according to the agency. The science is just getting clearer and clearer every day, McCabe said. I don't know how many times people need to hear that we are having the warmest summer on record or how many storms people need to see. This is no fooling. Officials at the White House and the EPA did not respond to requests for comment. The plan is the latest move in a string of efforts, including prodding grid operators to purchase more electricity from coal plants and asserting that coal plant retirements are threatening the reliability of the national power grid. To end what Trump has called his predecessor's war on coal and assure a sign to the industry that the Trump administration still has its back, even as coal production continues to decline. Michelle Bloodworth, president of the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity, a trade group that represents coal producers, noted that 40% of the nation's coal plants had either been retired or were scheduled to retire. She put the blame for that on a mix of market conditions and what she called a very stringent regulations under Obama. But she said efforts like Trump's push to order grid operators to purchase electricity from struggling coal plants, along with the new carbon regulations, represent a welcome relief for the coal industry. I certainly think we are supportive of what the administration is doing, and we applaud their efforts, she said. Conrad Schneider, advocacy director for the Clean Air Task Force, an environmental group, predicted that the new plan would ultimately make coal plants more competitive in the electricity markets, allowing them to displace cleaner sources of energy. Emissions are going to go up, and I don't mean from where they would have been under the Clean Power Plan, but relative to the trends now, Schneider said. This is to put the thumb on the scales and bring coal back. Under the Clean Power Plan, the Obama administration had sought to reduce the country's greenhouse gas emissions from power plants 32% below 2005 levels by 2030. There is no mention of an overarching national goal for reductions in the new Trump proposal, which was described on the condition of being anonymous. Instead, the rule sets guidelines for states to develop and submit to the EPA plans to establish patterns of performance for existing coal plants. The options for achieving cuts would also be narrower. Under the Obama-era rules, states had broad latitude on how to meet their targets, ranging from building wind farms to switching from coal to natural gas. Now reductions would be confined to measures coal plants can achieve on site, like improving heat efficiency. The United States has already achieved much of the reduction sought under the Clean Power Plan, and Allison D. Wood, a partner at the law firm Hunton Andrews Kurth, who represents several electric utilities, said she believed the new proposal would provide utilities with certainty while still allowing emissions to dip. It may not look as stringent, but one of the important things to keep in mind is the emissions reductions that were driven by the Clean Power Plan were driven by forcing a move from coal to natural gas and renewables, she said. That's happening anyway, even in the absence of the Clean Power Plan. And next, proprietors share tips for a successful Airbnb business. Just like hotels, not all Airbnbs are created equal. There are the gorgeous Instagram-friendly abodes meant to make visitors feel like they're in the lap of luxury, and the more serviceable spots geared towards travelers just stopping off for a good night's sleep. But whether you're operating a rental that's fancy, basic, or somewhere in between, owners tell us there are certain amenities all hosts should procure to make stays go smoothly for all parties. These experienced proprietors also let us in on extras that can mean the difference between a so-so stay and one that ends with a glowing review and decor guidelines that will ensure your property is remembered for the right reasons. Put yourself in the position of the traveler and begin in the bathroom. It should go without saying that the area should be squeaky clean, as should everywhere else, and include extra toilet paper, tissue, a cleaning wand, and plunger. Personal care items should include shower staples, shampoo, conditioner, and soap, and everything needed for hand washing. None of this stuff must be high-end. Recognizable drugstore products are totally fine. Invest in matching sets of towels that meet the maximum number of people your space can host. There's nothing wrong with white IKEA towels that you can bleach between uses, but watch the fabric for stains so you can swap them out. Other must-haves include safety equipment, a fire alarm, carbon monoxide detector with working batteries, a fire extinguisher, and a first aid kit should all be accessible. In the bedroom, sufficient linens are a must, as with the towels. They don't need to be fancy, but invest in a few sets specifically for visitors and keep an eye out for when it's time to retire them. If your guests have kitchen access, they need all the same stuff you would keep the place clean and functional. That includes dish soap, a sponge or scrubber, light cleaning supplies such as paper towels and multi-surface spray, a drying rack in the absence of a dishwasher, and laundry soap if there's a washer-dryer. Matt Marcus, an Airbnb host in Brooklyn, said the three messages he receives most often are, "Where is the hair dryer?" "Where is the iron?" and "Where are the extra blankets?" Don't forget a pad of paper and pen, a flashlight, and a set of instructions that include the Wi-Fi password and any other useful information guest might need. Then there are the things you might not think of but are definitely appreciated. When you're putting together your B&B, you're really creating an environment, explains Anthony D'Argenzio, a creative consultant and stylist whose rental, This Old Hudson, is in Hudson, New York. When people come to stay at his two-unit property, they're looking for a getaway, and D'Argenzio provides thoughtful touches that make their stay feel seamless. All guests are greeted with a bottle of wine from a local wine shop and other goodies found in town, along with a map curated by D'Argenzio and his wife of fun places to shop, eat, and drink. They also put coffee out on the counter, along with a grinder and a French press, nice glassware, and sometimes chocolate or a cheese plate. "You kind of want to let people imagine they live here," D'Argenzio said. The Sundapple space features vintage finds and plenty of comfortable places to read, recline, and relax. Sarah and Rich Combs have added similar touches to their property in Joshua Tree, California, including a Chemex coffee maker and a record player, plus an outdoor hot tub that makes the space feel a little more like home. Thoughtful but practical touches, such lamps by the beds and places to unwind, are a good idea for any host. The Combses suggest spending time in the space and paying attention to details that make it not just serviceable but enjoyable. They invested in nicer personal care products for guests and Casper mattresses for every room in their property. The Joshua Tree House, at the Joshua Tree House, host also might consider adding items you would find in a hotel, such as bathrobes. If you're hosting someone in a city where they might be wondering what to do, provide a curated list of recommendations in the booking letter or leave it on the counter for when they arrive. But supplying physical subway maps and guides can often be more convenient. If you're wondering what else you should provide, Jennifer Lindberg, whose rental is in Lockhart, Texas, has some good advice. "The guest knows best. We ask every guest for ideas on how their stay as well as their apartment could be improved," says Lindberg, who has dubbed her historical flat the Burtner. Thanks to this system, we've added umbrellas, a pizza cutter, Kleenex, mixing bowls, and noise machines. That feedback has been invaluable. Whether you're renting out an extra room or an entire home, decor can make all the difference, and owners agree that taking the personal out of the space is essential. That doesn't mean remove every family photo in the house if you're renting out an entire place, but it does mean personal pictures should come off the nightstands, and intimate artwork belongs out of sight. As for the decor, you don't have to approximate the Ritz. Think simple and tasteful. A consistent color scheme, well-appointed bedding, uncluttered surfaces, subdued artwork, or mirrors. For Airbnb operators such as D'Argenzio, Combs, Lindbergh, and Marcus, incorporating the spirit of the cities where they are located has been a good design directive. Each of the spaces nods toward the local heritage of the towns or cities, and all of them have excellent, honest photography that allow a renter to understand what they're signing up for when they rent the space. Getting everyone on the same page beforehand is crucial and can save host and guest a lot of headaches. And next, years after ban on video poker, fish game flourishing. Behind the locked front door and tinted windows of the Tank Arcade, people are winning and losing big. In a back room, a woman's voice breaks through the rattle of plastic buttons being slapped over and over again. "Good shot," she says. Garish aquatic creatures swim across a 55-inch TV screen embedded in the 6-foot game table. If you shoot and kill one, sometimes a whale, a sea dragon, or monster crab, you win points. Points are redeemable for cash or more credits to keep playing. This is the fish game. 12 years after North Carolina's ban on video poker machines, fish game tables are flourishing across the state. Charlotte has one of the highest concentrations of fish game arcades, with at least 40, although authorities say there could be twice that many in the city. Arcade operators maintain they're following state law because they say the money a person can win is based on skill, not luck. Police agencies are skeptical, saying that fish games may violate the state's gambling laws and that arcades attract crime. But neither the Attorney General's office nor the State Bureau of Investigation has clarified whether the games are legal, leading to inconsistent enforcement across the state. In Greensboro, police have banned the fish games. In other cities, though, including Charlotte and Raleigh, fish game arcades openly advertise with neon lights, big banners, and packed parking lots. Some police agencies told the Charlotte Observer they suspect illegal gambling inside the arcades, but they don't know whether a judge or a prosecutor will agree. In Concord, officials took up the issue on their own last year and put restrictions on arcades. The police chief still says state lawmakers need to step in and clarify what's legal and what's not. The state legislature created this mess, and they need to fix it. "The law is as clear as mud," said Concord Police Chief Gary Gasick. "Even some in the arcade business want clearer rules. The state should come in and say this is legal and this is not." And the operators would comply, said Terry Wood, who has owned 3 arcades in North Carolina. He sold his last arcade in Salisbury after a part-time employee was fatally shot inside during a domestic argument. The money, operators say, is good. In a week's time, a large arcade can easily collect $50,000 in revenue, according to several employees and police investigators. Smaller locations with fewer customers might pull in about $10,000 weekly. Some customers stay in the arcades hours at a time, managers say. Investigators say they've talked to players who, over a few hours, make multiple ATM runs for more cash. The lure is to play their money and see if they can double their money, said Keisha Reed, employee at the Tank Arcade in Charlotte. When you lose, it's a hard pill to swallow, she said, and you're not guaranteed to win every time. Many arcades stay open 24/7. Inside, customers are often fed free food and drinks. Once they start coming here, it's like a social club for them, said Rio Simpson, manager at Express Arcade in Charlotte. The cost to play, though, is high for some. Every time you hit the trigger, you're spending money, said Gary Gray, executive director of the North Carolina Council on Problem Gambling. Gambling addiction and the number of people who ask for help to quit has been on the rise in North Carolina, according to statistics from the state's hotline and counseling program. Hotline calls jumped from 3,825 between July 2015 and June 2016 to 6,113 from July 2017 to June 2018. The lottery and casino games are the most often cited problems, with sweepstakes and arcades making up about 16% of the people who are referred to the gambling counseling through the hotline. Some people are more susceptible to an addictive video game than others, Gray said. Arcades in North Carolina, he said, are often found near low-income neighborhoods where people can least afford to lose. I've had a ton of phone calls from family members of people losing money at these things. We've had people lose their homes, lose their marriages. You can lose an entire paycheck in one evening. September is a big month for music fests, but there's enough for everybody. September has long been the Triangle's prime season for outdoor festivals, especially in downtown Raleigh, where the streets are blocked off pretty much every weekend of the month. This brings in lots of money for the area. The lineup's major players this year include the Hopscotch Music Festival, September 6th through 8th, Dreamville Festival on September 15th, World of Bluegrass, September 25th through 29th, and The Art of Cool, September 28th through 29th. We've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.